This is Orson Welles, speaking from London.
To keep you in suspense.
Tired of the everyday grind.
Night transmissions. Hello, it's me again, and this would be show 112 of Night Transmissions. I'm glad you could make it. Glad I could make it. Glad anyone can make it. Tonight's show starts off with an episode of Murder by Experts from July the 11th of 1949, with what turns out to be the rather common name for a mystery of prescription for murder. And I mean, that is a common name. There are several books by that name. There are TV programs by that name. There were episodes of TV programs by that name. But this is Murder by Experts. Go at it. Murder by Experts was created by David Kogan, who is well remembered in old-time radio circles as the writer and creator of The Mysterious Traveler and The Strange Dr. Weird, plus numerous other radio programs that dotted the landscapes of the radio's golden age. Tonight, the show opens up with two men in a car. One's a decent guy, a doctor, who's picked up a person along the road, a hitchhiker. The kind of hitchhiker your mom warned you about. The escaped psychopathic killer kind.
Murder by Experts. The Mutual Broadcasting System presents Murder by Experts with your host and narrator, Mr. John Dixon Carr, world-famous mystery novelist and author of the recently published bestseller, The Life of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
This is John Dixon Carr. Each week at this time, Murder by Experts brings you a story of crime and mystery, which has been chosen for your approval by one of the world's leading detective writers. Those experts who are themselves masters of the art of murder and can hold tensity at its highest. This time, our guest expert is the noted mystery writer, Mr. Bruno Fischer, who has selected a fast-moving, realistic study of a killer at large, written by Joseph Ruskell and Paul Monash. And now we present Kenneth Lynch in Prescription for Murder. On a Midwestern highway, a car bearing two men moves at a good speed through a dark and stormy night. The driver of the car has just turned on the car radio.
Now for the local and state news. A giant manhunt is on tonight for escaped convict Curly Elkins, who shot his way out of the state prison at Harmon a few hours ago, killing two guards in the getaway. Roads in the vicinity of Harmon have been blocked, and search parties are combing the woods for the escaped desperado. All citizens are asked to be on the alert for Elkins, who is armed and dangerous. Elkins is 6'2", blue eyes, brown curly hair, pale complexion, with a horizontal scar on the left cheek. He was last seen wearing...
Why didn't you turn it off, Doc?
Why, I... Well, that is, the fog's bad enough without news like that distracting me.
Hey, what's that wheel, Doc? Your hand's shaking. Why are you so nervous?
Nervous? It's just this fog. I can't see an inch ahead of me. It gives me the jitters.
Oh, yeah. Hey, thanks for stopping and giving me a lift.
Oh, that's perfectly all right.
Didn't think I'd ever get a lift tonight. No one likes to take on a hitchhiker.
You from these parts?
No way.
You said you were going into town?
Yeah.
Which town?
Oh, same one you're headed for.
Somerset?
Yeah, Somerset, that's it. You know, it's funny how you get chummy on the road and tell your life's history, huh? See you, Dr. Richard Bennett. You're going to Somerset to take over some ailing old MD's practice. His daughter, too, huh? What's her name again? Marcia?
Yes. What town did I pick you up at, friend?
Harmony. So you've never seen Marcia or her old man, huh?
Why, no, I haven't.
Just exchanged letters with her from overseas, Japan. Now here you are, coming to a strange town to take over. Life history. It's funny the way guys open up on the road, ain't it? Now you take me. You know all about me, too, huh?
No, I don't.
You sure?
You didn't say a word. Didn't open your mouth till now, just now, and...
When what? When you turned the radio off and stared at me?
I stared at you?
Yeah. Now, watch the road, Doc. What was so interesting?
Nothing. Nothing at all.
No, come on, tell me, Doc. Why did you look at me like that? Why the sudden once-over?
Once-over? What gave you that idea?
Never mind my ideas, Doc. I'm wondering about yours.
But listen,
you suddenly got a bright idea, didn't you, Doc? You saw the light, huh? Maybe you can see this, too. This gun.
Now, wait a second.
Okay, Doc, just pull over to the side of the road. Come on, Doc, be smart. Pull over.
Oh, no. No, I'm not going to pull over. I'm going faster. It's 55 now, 60. You can't shoot me, Elkins, not now. Not while I keep it going this fast.
You got this figured all wrong, Doc. I can let you have it. After all, what have I got to lose? If I get caught, it's the chair. We go off the road, so I get killed, so what? But you get killed too, Doc. And you like to lose. Now look, I'm going to count to five, Doc. If you don't stop by then, I'm going to give it to you. One. Listen, Doc, stop the car now and you'll be okay. Two. Maybe I'll take your car, but what have I got to gain by killing you? Three, Doc. Three.
I'm not stopping.
Out here in the country, you'll be stranded for the night, but I don't have to shoot you, Doc. I'll get my head start. Four. I said four, Doc. Getting kind of close.
How do I know you won't shoot me?
It's your only chance. If you don't stop now, I'm surely going to let you have it. The other way, you got a chance. That's better, Doc. Now you're playing it smart. Okay, Doc, get out, but don't try anything.
Now look, Elkins. You have nothing to gain by...
I know, Doc. I said that myself. Now start walking into those woods.
But
don't argue with me. Get going. You've got a chance, Doc. Just trust your luck. It's been pretty good so far. Got you to be a sawbone. Got your girl. This will do, Doc. Stop here. Now he can't be seen from the road.
Elkins, I was only trying to be a decent guy, giving you a ride.
Sure, Doc, you're a good guy. You're a big guy, too, just about my size. Take off your coat, Doc, or you're going to change clothes.
Sure.
Come on, your shirt, too.
Here's my coat.
Get a shirt.
Right.
Silk shirt, huh? Nice. The pants. Come on, hurry.
All right.
Yeah, it's fine. Don't bother to put my stuff on. You won't catch cold. You don't have to be modest because...
Oh.
Two daughters. What do you know? Ha-ha! Through the clothes in the car. What a break. Not allowed to get to them. Spark plugs must be wet. Come on, baby. Start stuff. Need somebody coming. Motorcycle cop.
All right, yo. What's the idea?
Oh, what's the matter?
The tail light's out. Want somebody to come along and smash into you?
Gosh, it was on last time I noticed. Headlights are okay. Let me start my motor. See if that makes any difference.
All right. Maybe one on them. Now, just a second. I'll have a look.
No, switch on your brights. See if it works that way.
Okay, just a second. Yeah, copper, just a second while I shift in the reverse like this. Ah! Dumb copper.
Thank you.
road, Buck. I don't know, they wouldn't waste any time.
Hey, you want to get killed? Didn't you see this roadblock?
I know. Sorry, officer. There's fog, you know.
Well, let's see your license. Jameson, you come on to the other side.
Okay.
What's the matter, officer? Something wrong?
Yeah, plenty. Some guy escaped from the state prison. Now, let's see your license.
My license?
You got one, ain't you?
Yeah, it's right here in my wallet someplace. Yeah, here it is.
Let's see now. Yeah, 6 feet two, 190, brown hair. Bennett? Dr. Richard Bennett?
Huh?
Oh, so you're the new doc coming to Somerset.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I heard old Doc Milburn's been expecting you.
Doc Milburn's expecting, the whole town's expecting. Excuse us for stopping you like this.
Yes, right, sir. This is a heck of a reception. Practically being me mistook for an escaped convict.
Well, look, Red, I got an idea. Why don't we greet Doc Bennett here in style? You're going off duty in a few minutes anyway. Give him a motorcycle escort to Marsh's place.
That's a swell idea.
Now, wait a minute.
Won't take no for an answer. No, sir.
Boy, would I like to see Marsh's face when you pull off with that siren going.
Well, now, look, fellas, I appreciate all
this. Skip it, Doc. I'm already on the motorcycle. Come on. Let's go.
Go ahead, Doc. My release goes up in time. I'll bring up the rear.
Doc, here's the house.
Well, thanks a lot, officer. See you later.
Sure, but let me get Marsh first.
No, that's all right. You just run along.
I don't mind at all. Hey, Marsha?
Hello, Red. Is something wrong?
Wrong? Everything's fine. Look who I got with me.
Who?
Him. Don't you know him?
But, Red, I never saw that man before in my life.
See what goes. Look, you, didn't you say you was Dr. Richard Bennett?
Why, yes.
Richard Bennett? Oh, Dick, can you ever forgive me?
Say, what is this?
I thought you'd recognize me at first sight, Marsha, after all I learned.
Oh, Dick, do come in, please. Don't stand out here.
Now, look, Marsha,
right, Red, and thanks for showing him the way. You see, Red, we'd never really met. Well, anyway, it's all right.
Leave it to a woman to foul things up, eh, Doc? Had me thinking you were that escaped convict or something for a minute.
Oh, Red.
Well, be seeing you.
Goodbye, Red. Well, Dick, do come in, please. Oh, I'm so glad you're here. But don't stand out there. Come on. You know, we've just about given you up. It's so late, and Dad and I thought that with the fog and all over the road, look, I'll call Dad.
You know, I hope you'd look like this, but I never saw it. Well, I would have known you.
Oh, I think I'd have known you too, Dick, if you'd given me 1 second more. Tall, serious looking. But you didn't write me that you were wounded.
Wounded?
Well, that scar on your cheek.
Oh, fabulous. Well, I...
Who's that? Just came in my...
Dad, he's here. Dr. Bennett.
Dr. Bennett, well, at last. Hello, Dick. Don't mind my calling you that, though we've never met.
Good to see you, Dr. Milburn.
You must be tired and hungry.
Well, I am a little.
Of course you are. I'll show you up to your room, and Marsh will warm up something for Dick.
All right, Dad.
I'll tell Dick all about Scotty, the motorcycle cop you used to keep company with.
Oh, Dad.
Until your male romance started, of course. Well, we can all have a nice long chat. You two can talk about those soulful letters, but save me a moment with him, Marsha, to discuss his new patient.
All right, Dad.
And I'd like him to see some X-ray plates I've just developed. Right this way, Dick.
Okay.
Over here. Here they are, Dick. X-ray shots. Get to know your future patients inside out.
Yeah.
I know it's late, but here's one I'd like your diagnosis on.
My diagnosis?
We'll see if it checks with mine. Here, take it. Don't look alike. Ah. What do you make of it?
What?
What do I make of it? Well, I'd say...
What? Dick.
Huh? You will have your little joke, eh?
What do you mean?
Oh, you know well enough what I mean. You're holding that X-ray upside down.
Boy, I'm hungry. Never been hungrier in my life.
You want any more, Dick?
No, you just take it easy.
Dick, you seem so jumpy. Is there anything wrong?
Why not? I'm just tired. Well, you know how it is. Coming into a strange town. Taking over a new practice. Patients I don't even know. Got me sort of phased.
But that's what I always like about you. Your attitude.
Attitude?
When things go wrong. Out of the night that covers me, black as the pit from pole to pole. You finish it, Dick.
Finish it?
I'd like to hear you say it.
Say what?
The rest of the poem.
The poem? I don't know it.
Oh, stop kidding, Dick. It's Invictus.
Yeah? Well, I still don't know it.
Well, that's strange.
Why? Some people like one poem, others... Well, they don't. What's strange?
Because that was your favorite poem, Dick. You quoted it to me in one of the letters. Remember?
How are you feeling now, Dick?
Okay, I guess.
No matter, get a good night's rest, then you can start right in tomorrow.
Tomorrow? You mean start treating patients tomorrow?
Oh, yes. Sooner you take over, the better.
Oh, but I'm all fagged out, Doc. I need a rest.
Oh, by tomorrow, you'll be as fresh as day.
No, no. Look, I need a couple of days. That's all. A couple of days, and then I'll be all set.
Well, Dick...
Let me get accustomed to things, and then...
I'll see who it is, Dad.
Yes.
Excuse me, Dick.
Is your dad in, Marcia?
Yes, sir. Oh, good Lord, what's happened?
There's been an accident.
Why, it's Scotty.
Yep. He must have got run over. We found him lying on the road near his motorcycle. Unconscious.
Dad! Dad! Yeah? Come here, quick!
What's happened?
It's Scotty. He was run over.
Oh, for heavens, bring him into my office. Easy now. Easy.
All right, Doc.
Now,
all
right. Yeah? Put him down there.
Here?
Yeah, on the couch.
Okay.
Scotty? Oh, Scotty.
Looks like hit and run, Doc.
Yeah.
I'm going down to headquarters and report it.
Yes, Fred, you do that.
Call me at headquarters when you finish.
Marcia, this is it.
Here, Doc.
Got the cutaway uniform.
Oh, Scotty. Scotty, this is Marcia. Listen, Scotty. What happened?
No nasal or oral hemorrhage. Good.
Some guy. Car parked at the side of the road.
Easy now. I want to listen to your heart.
How is he, Father?
He'll be all right.
Oh, thank goodness.
Not a broken tooth, not an abrasion.
Will you have to move him to the hospital, Dad?
Well, not now. First aid, right now.
You ran over me on purpose. Meant to kill me.
What?
I think it was escaped killer. Curly Elkins.
Curly Elkins?
You got a good look at him?
Scotty, describe him, and we'll notify headquarters.
Well, his height was about...
Dr. Milburn, I'll take over this patient.
But, Dr. Bennett, I don't... Well, I thought you wanted to wait a few days.
I know, but you were right. I got to begin sometime. It may as well be now.
The voice.
What is it, Scotty?
The voice. Just now.
Lost consciousness again. What did he say?
I don't know. Something about a voice.
Just leave him to me. I'll handle it.
Well, let me explain the case.
I know. It's an accident case.
How did you know?
Well, I'm a mind reader. Pretty obvious, isn't it?
Well, I diagnose...
I'll make my own diagnosis.
All right, but I'll just stay around and help.
No, no help.
What?
No one's going to help me when you're gone, so I want to handle my very first case in this town alone.
Very well.
But, Dick, can I always help Father and kids.
No, Marcia. You go, too. But don't worry. I know he means a lot to you both. Rest easy. I'll take good care of him. Very good care of him.
All right. Let's go, Marcia.
How do you feel, Scotty?
Who are you?
Don't you know? Honest? How did you get run over? Did you get a good look at the driver?
No.
You sure?
I want to see old Doc Milburn.
Why? What do you want to tell him? You sure you can't identify that driver?
No.
I don't believe you. You're lying. You said that voice. What voice? What did you mean?
I want to talk to Marcia and the doc.
Let me see him.
I'm taking care of you, Scotty. I'm going to fix you up good right now. This scalpel ought to do the trick.
Look,
take it easy, Scotty. Why, still, just a little insurance, see? To make sure you feel all right.
I wish you'd hurry with Scotty. Dad, there's something funny about him, isn't there?
You think so, too?
Yes, I do. I recited a poem to him, one he'd sent me. Well, he didn't remember it.
That's nothing to condemn a man for, but I don't know. Maybe we'd better check up while he's busy with Scotty.
Yes, I can call his club in Los Angeles. Get a description of him.
Maybe you'd better.
All right. Hello? Hello, operator? Operator?
Put down the phone. I said put down that phone.
That's better. We don't want the police now, do we?
What have you done to Scotty?
Get a box for him after I'm gone.
Oh, Dr. Bennett. You're not Dr. Bennett.
That's right. My name is Elkins, Curly Elkins. Oh. Dr. Bennett is lying out in the woods with a bullet in his head. Oh. I got a bullet for each of you, too, if you make one false
You're
move.
You're not going to get away with this, Elkins.
Dad, don't!
Why, you old... That was dumb of you, Doc. Never rush a guy with a gun. Now listen to me, both of you. In case the cops return to check on Scotty's condition, you won't let him in the door. Scotty was fixed up, see, and went away for a rest. If either of you say one word out of turn, you're going to get it.
What do you want from us? Why don't you leave?
I'm staying right here, sister, right in this house until the heat's off. Remember this. I just as soon kill you as look at you. I'm staying put. You're going to cover for me. Because if you don't, if you, your old man, try anything or give me away, it's curtains for both of you. Now, how does that sound? Convincing? Well, that wasn't such a bad night now, was it? Cozy, just the three of us. A lot better than the pen, huh?
You can't keep this up forever, Elkins. Someone's sure to find out. And then...
Then it's flowers for you. Yeah, and for your Marcia, too. Get up, Doc. I don't like to see you always laying around, see?
He can't get up. You hurt his back when you hit him with your gun. But we'll get even with you, Elkins. You can't keep us prisoners forever. One of us will find a way. You can't always stay up chain-smoking. You've got to go to sleep sometime.
Yeah, sure I do, sis. But when I do, I'll take the old man into the room with me and tie him up. Then I'll lock the door and sleep with a gun under my pillow. If anyone tries to get into that room...
You've got it all figured out, haven't you, Elkins? So what are you going to do in a couple of hours when my patients come in?
I thought of that too, Doc. You'll tell them all you got kind of crippled falling down the stairs, see, and you'll send them away. But you won't let out one peep because all the time I'll be upstairs with Marcia. She'll stay alive as long as you play ball, Doc. That's just how long, no more. What's taking us so long? Hurry up with that coffee.
It's not boiled yet, Elkins.
What's taking you so long? You growing it? Gotta have a swallow of Java, you hear?
Marcia's bringing it. What's the matter? Why it's so jumpy? Why your eyes so bloodshot?
Shut up.
Look at your hands, trembling. What is it? Conscience? I doubt it.
Shut up, Doc. Clam up, you hear?
Nerves? What are you afraid of? You've got the gun in your hand.
Clam up, I say, what? Let's see who's jumpy. As soon as I've had my coffee, just wait. He's gonna be glad to get rid of me, hey, Doc? Half an hour, it'll be dark, and I'm scrambling out of here. You feel good about that, eh, Sawbones?
I can't say I'll be sorry.
You hear that, Marcia? He thinks I'm going off and leave you two here to blow the whistle on me. He thinks I'm fool enough to do that. What'd they take me for, a dope?
Elkins, no. Good heavens, man, surely you won't. Elkins, do anything you want to me, but Marcia...
She's deaf and dumb. She can't talk to the cops.
I promise we won't. We won't breathe a word. Not a word. I beg you.
Ask me, Doc. Ask me right. Who knows? Come on with that job.
Coming. You like it hot, don't you?
Good here. Yeah, maybe I will. Maybe I won't, Doc. Maybe I'll kiss you both goodbye. Or maybe two bullets will do it. You can't be sure. Gives you kind of a funny feeling, huh?
Drink your coffee.
Who's nervous now, huh? Don't know if you're alive or dead in a few minutes from now. Ain't that something?
Drink your coffee, Elkins.
Why?
Why what?
Why are you so anxious for me to drink this cup of coffee?
You wanted it, didn't you?
It's good?
I hope so.
You hope so, huh? You hope maybe a few drops of poison will do the trick and get rid of me,
What are you talking about?
You wouldn't try a little thing like that now, would you, to save your own neck? Here, you drink it.
Me?
Yeah, you drink it. Drink it, I say. Take a few swaps.
Very well. Why not? For the silly thing. Give it here. There. Are you satisfied now?
Okay. Wasn't taking any chances. Give me that coffee now.
Dad. Dad.
Hmm?
BCD. BCD.
C2SO4. Quick. What's all that? What was that double talk?
Double talk, Elkins?
Come on, spill it. What was it all about? Where's she run off to?
She's gone to the next room. To the dispensary.
What for?
Get a drink.
Drink? Of what?
Of a certain liquid.
What for? What is this? Tell me, you scheming old devil, or I'll kill you right now. What did she ask you? What did you answer? What?
My daughter just asked me the antidote for poison. I gave it to her.
Antidote? Poison?
Hefner's poison coffee you both just drank, Elkins. It would take exactly 60 seconds to kill you.
60 seconds? Now, Marsha! Marsha!
Yes, Elkins? May I help you? Do you want something in this laboratory?
Yeah. Antidote, swallow.
Oh, yes, I took some myself. I quite well now, thank you.
Give it to me. Where is it?
No, isn't it a pity? I forget.
Where is it? What bottle? Holy fuck! Which one? Which? Doc, tell me. Tell me which one. The inside's burning. Which one?
C2SO4.
What's that?
The antidote.
C what?
But the full name's on the bottle.
What's the name? What's the name?
You're a doctor, aren't you?
Doc.
So you weren't merely posing?
Give me a break.
Any doctor would know, Dr. Bennett.
Get it for me. But I'll scatter it.
I'd be glad to, Dr. Bennett. You had a tip of me. But I can't move. I must lie on this couch, perhaps, for life. Or else I'd get the bottle for you and save you.
I'll kill you.
Now, Dr. Bennett, there is no antidote to death.
Prescription for Murder was written by Joseph Ruskell and Paul Monash. In the cast were Kenny Lynch, Kathy McGregor, Roger DeCoven, Bernie Grant, and Jack Curtis. Music is under the direction of Emerson Buckley, composed by Richard DuPage. Murder by Experts is produced and directed by Robert A. Arthur and David Cogan. All characters in our story were fictitious. Any resemblance to the names of actual persons was purely coincidental. This is Phil Tonkin speaking. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
You know, I'll bet you were thinking, when the cops stopped him, didn't they notice that the picture on the driver's license was different than the guy himself? But, of course, there wasn't a picture on the driver's license. Photos on driver's license weren't particularly common until the mid-70s. I don't know exactly when they came in. I was living in California. Sometime around the mid-70s when California first put pictures on license. And I moved to Oregon in 1977, not too long after Oregon had decided to put pictures on driver's license. I think probably in 1949, it was quite uncommon to have photos on driver's license. Just a general description. And that is how our murderer got away with being mistaken for the good doctor. The general description just wasn't good enough. Well, this brings us to our first break. Hey, I'm sorry, but I gotta do it. Look, I'm just gonna play some music, okay? In our second segment, we have one of Chet Cheddar's tales from the morgue. This is a series of short stories told to you by an obliging old morgue attendant and licensed embalmer named Chet Cheddar. He'll tell any passing stranger his stories. Most of them are quite fanciful and deal with topics that would be classified as supernatural or science fiction. They always border on the outrageous, but they're meant to be. Even the creators of the series admit that the show is rather offbeat. But I think you will find, as I have found, that it is not without charm. That lies in the humorous writing and the recurring characters. Tonight is an episode called Interface to Terror, originally done sometime in 1991. It's about this whippy scientist who invents a device that transfers information to the brain. Doesn't sound too harmful, does it? Well, you haven't met his evil brother, Bruno.
M&J Audio Theater presents Chet Cheddar's Tales from the Morgue.
Come in, my friend. Yes, have a seat, won't you? There. There you are. My name is Chet Cheddar. I'm the morgue attendant and resident storyteller. We here at the morgue have just bought a new computer. I'm trying to transfer the information from our old filing system. Now then, let's see. Press S for store and then enter. Oh, drat. Failed again, I'm afraid. I'm afraid I'm not mentally equipped for this sort of thing. Computers and technical manuals and such. However, I do recall a story about a young man who knew this technology very well. Yes. He lived in a two-story house in the country, not too far from a big city. I think he even went so far as to put a laboratory on the second floor.
There we go. Let's see now. I'll just adjust the transmitting signal. Adjust the head size. Accelerate the receiving coordinates to 17. There it is. It is finally complete. My greatest invention. Now, all I need is a guinea pig to test it on.
Hey! Hey, lame brain!
Ah.
Hey, you moron, you up there goofing off again, hey?
Oh, brother's home. I think I have a volunteer.
Yes. Yes, brother. I'm upstairs. Come up here. I have something I want to show you.
Oh, yes. Oh, well, the excitement's killing me. I can't wait. Hey, you've been up here all day playing with the stupid chemistry set, hey, you little geek?
It is a laboratory, brother. I need it for my work. I'm an inventor.
No, wrong. You ain't no inventor, because you never sold nothing. You know why you never sold nothing? Because these inventions of yours, they're crap, that's why.
Oh, well, now that hurts, brother.
When you gonna wise up, huh? Why don't you go out and find a job and bring some money into this house?
Now, brother, I do contribute to this house. I have that job at the library.
Oh, that's nickel and dime stuff. That ain't nothing. Hey, I'll tell you what I can do. I can put in a good word for you up there at Tino's, all right?
Oh.
I mean, he needs a guy that's good with numbers. You can count money, can't you?
No, thanks, brother. Perhaps working for a loan shark is okay for you, but
Organized crime doesn't interest me.
You little pinhead, you got the right to talk like that to me? And my hand.
Now, look what you've done. You've broken a beaker of hydrochloric acid.
It burns. It burns.
Well, of course it burns. It's acid. Here, give me your hand.
No.
Easy. Let me put this ointment on it. There you go. Now, isn't that better?
Yeah, that is better.
Yeah. I invented this ointment, you know. It immediately counteracts acid burns. But wait till you see my latest invention, brother.
Oh, no, I ain't interested. Buzz off.
Now, don't be hasty. Let me fix you a drink.
And now you're talking. I could use a drink.
Yes, I thought so. You could always use one. Here you go. Drink it down. It'll make you feel better. There you go.
Yeah, you're right. I feel better already.
Yeah.
I still want you to buzz off, though. Hey, what's that you got in your hand there?
Oh, this is my new invention, brother. I call it the Lobometer. It is capable of transforming even a man like yourself into a genius.
Looks like a football helmet, huh?
Yeah.
But what do you mean a man like myself?
Oh, I'm sorry, brother. I didn't mean to touch a nerve. Shall we try the helmet on?
Hey, get the thing away from me. I ain't putting it on.
I'm afraid I must insist, brother.
Hey! Get this thing off my head!
Easy.
I can't move.
Yes.
Hey, did you put something in my drink, you crazy moron?
It's a very harmless drug, brother. It causes only temporary paralysis. Now, if this works, we'll both be very, very rich. Won't that be nice, brother?
What are you gonna do to me, huh?
Well, now, observe. I only want to explain this once. This is a computer keyboard, you see. And this is a disk drive. And this is a transmitting cord. It links the computer to the helmet.
Look. You take it off my head now, and I won't kill you later, I promise.
Now, don't be silly, brother. I'm going to wake up that sleeping brain of yours. Now, you see this? It is a floppy disk. It contains an entire dictionary. I'm going to send this information through the helmet into your brain in less than 10 seconds. Are you ready, brother?
Get this thing off my head!
I knew you'd be ready. Now, we'll just switch the helmet on.
Hey, my head's vibrating!
It works. Goody. Now, I'll place the floppy disk into the disk drive, press a few keys, and then initiate the transmission procedure. Hold on, brother. Your brain is about to take a little ride.
Take it off. I don't... Hey, what was that?
It is pulses of information, computerized information going into your brain. Take it easy now, brother.
My head.
Easy.
What did you do to my head?
Now, easy now. Your brain has just received a vast amount of information. It needs time to process it all. How do you feel?
Like someone kicked me in the head. Hey, take this thing off of me, jerk face.
Oh, yes, of course. There you go.
Hey, I think I can move now.
Well, of course. I told you the paralysis was only temporary.
Yeah, well, that's too bad for you.
Brother. Let go of my neck. I can't breathe.
Well, that's the idea, egghead. You're catching on. I get a little irritated when someone tries to kill me.
No, brother. I've made you smarter.
Yeah? Well, I don't feel no smarter. It feels like my brain's been fried or something. I know what your game is. You try the thing on me to see if it works right, huh?
I know.
You could have killed me.
No. Demophobia, brother. Demophobia.
Huh? What did you say?
Demophobia, brother.
Oh, now you're calling me names, eh? You got all the nerve in the world, you little...
Ow! No, brother, no. Demophobia. Think a minute, you know the word. Demophobia.
Yeah, I do know that word. Demophobia. An unnatural fear of crowds. Derived from the Greek word demos.
Yes.
Hey, I never heard that word before.
Yes, brother. You have a detailed knowledge of thousands of words now. And that's just the beginning. Anything that can be stored on computer software can be sent through the helmet into the human brain. Imagine the possibilities.
Yeah, I'm imagining all right. I'm imagining some very beneficial uses for that little gadget of yours. Beneficial. I'm word smart.
Now, I don't like that look in your eyes, brother.
Yeah.
The Lobometer is to benefit society.
Yeah? Well, to hell with society. I'm looking out for numero uno. You got that? I got some plans for that thing of yours. And you're gonna help me, right?
Why?
What are you talking about?
Well, don't the banks keep credit card and checking account numbers in the computer?
No. No. I will not use the lobometer for that.
You're going to do it exactly like I tell you. You understand? You're going to start earning your keep around here.
Brother, please, don't shove me like that. I'm getting too close to the window.
Maybe I don't even need you, huh? Maybe I can work this computer gadget myself. Yeah. Yeah, how can it be?
Brother, please, the window.
You're going to do it exactly like I tell you. You're going to...
Brother!
That stupid moron. Broke a perfectly good window.
Well, now this is just a wonderful situation to be in. Two broken legs, a broken arm, and being pushed around like an invalid in a wheelchair.
Yeah, well, that's what you get for taking a dive out of a second-story window.
You are shoving me. I lost my balance.
You tripped over an electrical cord, huh?
Yes, but I wouldn't have tripped over the cord if you hadn't been shoving me.
Ah, shut up. Before I push you the wrong way down a one-way street or something.
Very well.
Now, here we are at the credit bureau, okay? Remember how our little game's gonna be played?
Yes. We're going to pretend, aren't we?
Yeah, that's right. You got that helmet thing ready?
Well, of course. It's been in my lap all this time. You know, I'm not exactly thrilled about entering a life of crime with you.
Yeah, well, you're gonna do it, though, ain't you?
Yes.
You know, I wasn't exactly thrilled about being drugged up yesterday.
You're never going to let me live that down, are you?
I'm not gonna let you live at all if you don't shut up.
Very well, brother, very well. It appears I'm at your mercy in this chair.
Yeah. At my mercy. I like the sound of that. Yeah, try to keep it that way. Now clam up, all right?
Yes.
We're going to go over to that broad at the computer desk over there, and I'll do all the talking.
Oh, of course, brother. Talking is your forte, isn't it?
Hello. Welcome to Big City Credit Bureau. I am Patty. May I help you?
Well, hello, Patty. Actually, we're here to help you. We're from Citywide Computer Repair.
Oh.
We come to give your system the once-over.
Oh.
And by the way, that is a lovely shade of lipstick, Patty.
Well, thank you. It's lavender, you know. Well, actually, I think our computers are running fine.
Well, it may appear that way, Patty, but, you ever hear of a computer virus?
No.
The nasty little devils. They get in a computer program, and just when you think things are running fine, zap.
Ooh.
It completely erases.
Well,
now, would you want to be responsible for that?
Oh, my, no.
Well, of course you wouldn't. I can see you're an intelligent girl. So we'll just go about our business, all right? Assistant Bernard, hand me that helmet, would you?
Of course. Here you are.
Pardon me, but what is that you're putting on your head?
It's of a highly technical nature, Patty. Let's call it a glitch detector, yeah.
Oh, I see.
Hook it up to the computer, would you, Assistant Bernard?
Oh, yes, I'd be delighted to.
Thank you. Now, Patty, my assistant here is going to need to use your computer for a couple of seconds, if you don't mind.
Oh, no. You're the expert, so I'll just stand back and watch.
Okay, you do that. You're a lovely girl. We got to get to some of those nasty viruses now. Assistant Bernard, see if you can find the credit card numbers.
Yes, very well, very well.
Pardon my intrusion, but why do you need the credit card numbers?
Oh, hey, Patty, those nasty computer viruses, they head right for those credit card numbers. They like those the best.
Oh, I see.
Here we are. I found the numbers. We're ready for transmission. Turn the helmet on.
All right, here we go.
Here we are.
Oh, wow, what a blast.
Oh. All right, we're approaching the first pulse now. Here we go. Hold on. Here it comes.
Oh, my.
There you are. Second pulse coming. Hold on. Here we go. Right now.
Oh, my heavens.
Hey, it worked.
Oh.
All those names and numbers in my head, clear as day. It's like they were always there.
I'm afraid to ask, but how does it look?
Well, Patty, I'm delighted to announce that your computer is completely free of viruses and glitches.
Oh,
and I also want to thank you for cooperating during our little test here.
Oh, well, it was very, very interesting. I just wish I knew what you were doing.
Well, Why don't you give me your card, and I'll send you some pamphlets and some brochures explaining how all this stuff works.
Sir, don't you think we should go now? We have other appointments.
Oh, yeah, I guess we should go. Well, Patty, it's been lovely meeting your acquaintance.
Well, it's been very, very nice meeting you, too. I suppose you'll just send us a bill, right?
Oh, yeah, we'll send you a bill, yeah.
All right.
So long, Patty.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, that Patty's my kind of girl.
Yes, I figured she would be, brother.
Six, seven, eight, nine, ten. Yeah, look at that. $10,000. Look at that pile of lettuce, eh? Not bad for 2 days, eh, little brother?
Oh, it's wonderful. You've managed to turn a great invention into a tool of evil in only 2 days. Yeah. I congratulate you, brother.
Yeah, now, you better be careful. I know sarcasm when I hear it.
Oh, yes.
I don't walk in dictionary. Now, give me a beer before I kick those crutches out from under you.
Of course.
Yeah, I tell you, these credit card numbers was only the beginning. They got everything on these computer software disk things now. Look at this. Look at the stuff I stole from a computer store. How to win at poker, roulette, craps. I'll clean the house at Vegas.
Well, gambling is legal in Las Vegas, brother. That's hardly your style, is it?
What did I tell you about that sarcasm?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Let's see how you walk with one crutch.
No.
Oh, dear me.
Yeah, you better learn to watch that smart tongue of yours. The life you saved could be your own.
Yes. Here's your beer.
Yeah, give it here. And it better not spew up in my face when I open it either. Yeah, who the hell could that be?
Shall I crawl to the door and find out for you, brother?
No, just stay there and dummy up. And get lost. Nobody's here.
Open up, Bruno. The boss wants to talk to you.
It's rat-faced Charlie.
All right, I'm coming.
Well, hey, rat-faced, boss, hey, come on in out of the rain.
Thanks. I hadn't seen you in a while, Bruno. Thought I'd better come check on you, see if you was sick or something.
Yeah, you ain't sick, are you, Bruno?
Oh, no, I'm not sick, boss. I forgot to tell you. Can you believe it? I actually found the job.
Well, you found a job.
Yeah, I found a job.
Well, ain't that beautiful?
Yeah, it's pretty. I found a job.
Now, Bruno, you were shining shoes for dimes when I found you.
Yeah, shining shoes for dimes.
I cut you in on some very sweet deals now.
Yeah.
If you found something, I'd like a little share of it.
Yeah, share of it, Bruno, share of it.
Okay, all right, I'm going to cut the strings right now. I ain't working for you no more. You hear me? I got my own thing now. I don't need you no more. You find some other bum to do your dirty work.
You dirty backstabbing. You got some nerve using that tone with me.
Hey, boss, put down the gun, huh?
Yeah, blow his brains out, boss.
Now start talking. Tell me what kind of deal you found, Bruno, and I might let you live.
Listen, boss, it ain't like that.
I'm tired of talking. Dirty bum.
You shot the boss. You killed him.
I never touched him.
I shot him. And there's plenty where that came from, so I suggest you leave now.
You're dead. Yeah, wait till the gang finds out. You're dead, both of you. Dead.
Red face.
You're dead.
I can't believe you did it.
Well, if you're going to have a gun, brother, I suggest you keep it with you. I found this in a dresser drawer.
Oh, God, are we in trouble now?
I had no choice. I had to shoot him. He would have killed you and myself as well, more than likely. One less mobster in the world. Now, brother, take the body to the river and dump him there. Take the back roads. Don't draw attention to yourself. Drive the speed limit.
I can't do that.
Do it, brother. You have to do it. For once in your life, listen to me. When the police find the body, they'll think it's just another mob hit. That's all.
However, if you're leaving bleeding here on the front porch, that might draw suspicion.
All right. I'll do it. What are we going to do? What are we going to do about them? They're going to come after us.
I'll think of something, brother. Believe me, I'll think of something.
Yes, indeed he did think of something. The meek little inventor was unwillingly pulled into a life of crime and deception. And now he had taken the life of another man. The shocking thing was that he was beginning to enjoy this new lifestyle. He had invented something that was turning an enormous profit. And committing a criminal act was thrilling. Still, he wanted to be in charge of his destiny. He wanted to be the boss. And only one man stood in his way. He knew exactly what to do about that problem.
Here we are. Ah. Here. I believe that will work. Now, just need to tighten the screw on this transmitting circuit. Ah, there. All ready. Ah, you have returned, brother.
Yeah.
I trust you got rid of the corpse?
Yeah, I got rid of it. I dumped it in the river, just like you said.
Good.
God, the body was, It was real heavy. It was like a sack of wet cement or something.
Well, you weren't seen, were you?
No, there wasn't no traffic or nothing. There's blood in the trunk, though. Not much, but you can still see it.
Well, I'll take care of that later. I'm sorry that I had to put you through all this, brother, but it's your own fault for not choosing a better class of people to play with.
I don't need your lip. I need a drink.
Well, I'm sorry, brother. We're all out of liquor.
What? You forgot to go to the liquor store again, didn't you, you little twerp? We gotta get out of here. We gotta take the money and get a plane ticket and get out of here. Go anywhere.
And spend the rest of our lives looking over our shoulders? No, thank you. We're not going anywhere. We're staying right here.
But they're gonna come after us for killing the boss.
Let them come. I know how to handle apes like that. You think they really care about that man I killed? Ha. Huh. They would have done the same thing for the right amount of money. So when they come, I'll give them a few $1,000 and tell them there's more where that came from. And then, once I've gained their trust, I'll eliminate them.
What are you talking about? You gonna shoot them too?
Oh, no. Too crude, too messy. There are other ways, less detectable ways.
Oh, God. I need a drink. I need to relax.
I have the cure for what ails you, brother. A little surprise.
I ain't no mood for no surprises.
Well, I think you'll enjoy this one. Now sit here, make yourself comfortable. I made a small adjustment on the lobometer while you were gone.
What kind of adjustment?
Well, you see, before, the lobometer only transmitted words and numbers to the brain.
Yeah?
But now, it can actually transmit images. Yeah. You see, your brain has a section that's called, for lack of a better phrase, we'll call it the dream center.
Okay.
By centering on that specific part of your brain, the dream center,
yeah,
you can experience images like a dream. For instance, I can type the words rainstorm on the keyboard, and you would see, feel, even smell rain like it was really there.
Yeah.
Here, put on the helmet and I'll show you.
It ain't some kind of trick, is it?
Trust me, brother. Here you go. Put it on. Now, we'll just turn it on. There we go.
I hate when you turn that thing on. It showed in my brain.
Now then, tell me, brother. Where would you like to be right now? Pick any place in the world.
I don't know. How about one of them tropical islands with the palm trees and all that crap?
One tropical island coming up. Now, let's see. Blue sky, sand, ocean, palm trees.
Yeah.
Enter.
Yeah, I see it. It's like I'm really there. I can even feel the sand under my feet.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, any danger around here?
Oh, you want a female companion, do you? All right. Let's see, blonde hair, tan, measurements. There you are.
Yeah.
Well, Oh. Hello, handsome.
Hey, little lady. Come here often?
Uh-oh. There's trouble, brother. The girl is turning into a giant man-eating lizard.
Huh?
Get away from me! Get away from me! Suddenly, a jet flies by and drops a big bomb on the both of you.
A bomb? Get me out of here! Get me out of here!
Oh no! Oh no, brother! Look out! Look out! A herd of wild animals is stampeding straight towards you.
Here they come! What am I gonna do? Oh, my God!
Wait, brother. Yeah. The animals.
What?
They're changing. They're changing into...
What?
Into...
What?
Bees!
No, not bees! Not bees! No!
Yes, they're bees. They're African killer bees. All around you. And they're stinging you, brother.
No!
Stinging your face. Stinging you in places you never knew you had. Stinging your entire body. Now they're in your brain now, brother. They're stinging your brain.
My head.
There's no escape, brother. There's no escape from the stinging bees.
What am I going to do? I got to get out of here.
Brother.
I got to get out of here.
Jump through the window, brother. Jump through the window. It's the only way.
The window.
Sorry, brother. I'm very sorry. Rest in peace.
Open up, Bruno. We know you're in there. Open up.
The door is open.
There he is. And there's the bum that killed the boss.
You want me to break his neck, rat-faced Charlie?
Hold up, Knuckles. Hey, you bum, you. Hey, where's Bruno at, huh?
He was very frightened that you're going to come and kill him, so he committed suicide. He jumped out of the window.
Yeah, look. Look, there he is down in the street. He did jump out.
Holy moly. Hey, look at all that money there on the table. Where did all that come from, eh?
Oh, I thought you would see the money sooner or later. There's plenty more where that came from. How would you two like to be my partner?
Work for a bum like you after you killed the boss?
Hey, let's face it, rat face. The boss was a bum, too.
Yeah, and I like the look of that money. Okay, say we did join up with you, eh? What would we have to do?
Oh, it's, very, very simple. All I would need is your, brain.
There you are. A story for the computer age. Personally, I prefer to leave modern technology in the hands of those who know how to use it. Besides, a damp morgue is no place for electronic equipment. And now, I'm afraid I must go. I have to poison the maggots. That's a full day's job. But please, do return for another story, won't you? Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Have just heard Chet Cheddar's Tales from the Morgue. Today's installment, Interface to Terror. The names and characters portrayed in this production are fictitious. Any similarities with actual persons, living or dead, is purely coincidental. A production by M&J Audio Theater. For correspondence, send to M&J Audio Theater,
923 East Main, Mejia, Texas. Mejia is spelled M-E-X-I-A. The zip, 76667.
We got a break. But we'll be back real soon with some science fiction. I hope you like science fiction. I sure do.
By Damon Knight, titled Nebula Award Stories. It's a Nebula Award Best Short Story of 1965 by Harlan Ellison. Repent, Harlequin, said the TikTok man. There are always those who ask, what is it all about? For those who need to ask, for those who need points sharply made, who need to know where it's at, this. The mass of men serve the state thus, not as men mainly, but as machines with their bodies. They are the standing army, the militia, jailers, constables, posse comitatus, etc. In most cases, there's no free exercise whatever of the judgment or of the moral sense. But they put themselves on a level with wood and earth and stones. And wooden men can perhaps be manufactured that will serve the purposes as well. Such command no more respect than men of straw or a lump of dirt. They have the same sort of worth only as horses and dogs. Yet such as these even are commonly esteemed good citizens. Others, as most legislators, politicians, lawyers, ministers, and office holders, serve the state chiefly with their heads. And as they rarely make any moral distinctions, they are as likely to serve the devil, without intending it, as God. A very few, as heroes, patriots, martyrs, reformers in the great sense, and men, serve the state with their consciences also, and so necessarily resist it for the most part. And they are commonly treated as enemies by it. Henry David Thoreau from Civil Disobedience. That's the heart of it. Now begin in the middle, and later learn the beginning. The end will take care of itself. But because it was the very world it was, the very world they had allowed it to become, for months his activities did not come to the alarmed attention of the ones who kept the machine functioning smoothly, the ones who poured the very best butter over the cams and mainsprings of the culture. Not until it had become obvious that somehow, some way, he had become a notoriety, a celebrity, perhaps even a hero for what officialdom inescapably tagged an emotionally disturbed segment of the populace, did they turn it over to the TikTok man and his legal machinery. But by then, because it was the very world it was, and they had no way to predict he would happen, possibly a strain of disease long defunct, now suddenly reborn in a system where immunity had been forgotten, had lapsed, he had been allowed to become too real. Now he had form and substance. He had become a personality, something they had filtered out of the system many decades ago. But there it was, and there he was, a very definitely imposing personality. In certain circles, middle-class circles, it was thought disgusting. Vulgar ostentation, anarchistic, shameful. In others, there was only sniggering. Those strata where thought is subjugated to form in ritual, niceties, proprieties. But down below, down below, where the people always needed their saints and sinners, their bread and circuses, their heroes and villains, he was considered a Bolivar, a Napoleon, a Robin Hood, a Dick Bong, Ace of Aces, a Jesus, a Jomo Kenyatta. And at the top, where, like socially attuned shipwrecked Kellys, every tremor and vibration threatens to dislodge the wealthy, powerful, entitled from their flagpoles, he was considered a menace, a heretic, a rebel, a disgrace, a peril. He was known down the line to the very heart and meat core, but the important reactions were high above and far below, at the very top, at the very bottom. So his file was turned over, along with his time card and his cardio plate, to the office of the TikTok man. The TikTok man, very much over 6 feet tall, often silent, a soft, purring man when things went time-wise. The TikTok man. Even in the cubicles of the hierarchy, where fear was generated, seldom suffered, he was called the TikTok man. But no one called him that to his mask. You don't call a man a hated name, not when that man behind his mask is capable of revoking the minutes, the hours, the days, the nights, the years of your life. He was called the master timekeeper to his mask. It was safer that way.
This is what he is, said the TikTok man with genuine softness. But not who he is. This time card I'm holding in my left hand has a name on it. But it is the name of what he is, not who he is. This cardio plate here in my right hand is also named, but not whom named, merely what named. Before I can exercise proper revocation, I have to know who this what is.
To his staff, all the ferrets, all the loggers, all the finks, all the comics, even the minis, he said,
who is this harlequin?
He wasn't purring smoothly. Time-wise, it was a jangle. However, it was the longest single speech they had ever heard him utter at one time, the staff, the ferrets, the loggers, the finks, the comics, but not the minis, who usually weren't around to know in any case. But even they scurried to find out. Who is the harlequin? High above the third level of the city, he crouched on the humming aluminum frame platform of the airboat. Foof, airboat indeed. Swizzle skid is what it was, with a tow rack jerry-rigged, and stared down at the neat Mondrian arrangement of the buildings. Somewhere nearby, he could hear the metronomic left of the 2:47 p.m. shift entering the Timken roller-bearing plant in their sneakers. A minute later, precisely, he heard the softer right of the 5 a.m. formation going home. An elfish grin spread across his tanned features, and his dimples appeared for a moment. Then, scratching at his thatch of auburn hair, he shrugged within his motley, as though girding himself for what came next, and threw the joystick forward and bent into the wind as the airboat dropped. He skimmed over a sidewalk, purposely dropping a few feet to crease the tassels of the ladies of fashion, and, inserting thumbs and large ears, he stuck out his tongue, rolled his eyes, and went, wugga, wugga, wugga. It was a minor diversion. One pedestrian skittered and tumbled, sending parcels every which way. Another wet herself, a third keeled slantwise, and the walk was stopped automatically by the servitors until she could be resuscitated. It was a minor diversion. Then he swirled away on a vagrant breeze and was gone. Hi-ho! As he rounded the cornice of the Time Motion Study Building, he saw the shift just boarding the slidewalk. With practiced motion and an absolute conservation of movement, they sidestepped up onto the slow strip and, in a chorus line reminiscent of a Busby Berkeley film of the antediluvian 1930s, advanced across the strips, ostrich walking, till they were lined up on the express strip. Once more, in anticipation, the elfin grin spread, and there was a tooth missing back there on the left side. He dipped, skimmed, and swooped over them,
And then, scrunching about on the airboat, he released the holding pins that fastened shut the ends of the homemade pouring troughs that kept his cargo from dumping prematurely. And as he worked the trough pins, the airboat slid over to factory workers, and $150,000 worth of jelly beans cascaded down on the express trip. Jelly beans. Millions and billions of purples and yellows and greens and licorice and grape and raspberry and mint, and round and smooth and crunchy outside and soft and mealy inside and sugary and bouncing, jouncing, tumbling, clittering, clattering, skittering, fell on the heads and shoulders and hard hats and carapaces of the Timken workers, tinkling on the slidewalk and bouncing away and rolling about underfoot and filling the sky on their way down with all the colors of joy and childhood and holidays. Coming down in a steady rain, a solid wash, a torrent of colors and sweetness out of the sky from above, and entering a universe of sanity and metronomic order with quite mad cuckoo newness. Jelly beans. The shift workers howled and laughed and were pelted and broke ranks. And the jelly beans managed to work their way into the mechanism of the slidewalks, after which there was a hideous scraping as the sound of a million fingernails rasped down a quarter of a million blackboards, followed by a coughing and a sputtering, and then the slidewalks all stopped, and everyone was dumped this away and that away in a jackstraw tumble, and still laughing and popping little jelly bean eggs of childish color into their mouths. It was a holiday, and a jollity, an absolute insanity, a giggle. But the shift was delayed 7 minutes. They did not get home for 7 minutes. The master's schedule was thrown off by 7 minutes. Quotas were delayed by inoperative slidewalks for 7 minutes. He had tapped the first domino in the line, and one after another, like chick, 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 the others had fallen. The system had been 7 minutes worth of disrupted. It was a tiny matter, one hardly worthy of note, but in a society where the single driving force was order and unity and promptness and clock-like precision and attention to the clock, reverence of the gods of the passage of time, it was a disaster of major importance. So, he was ordered to appear before the TikTok man. It was broadcast across every channel of the communications web. He was ordered to be there at 7, damn it, on time. And they waited, and they waited. But he didn't show up until almost 10:30, at which time he merely sang a little song about moonlight in a place no one had ever heard of called Vermont, and vanished again. But they had all been waiting since 7. And it wrecked hell with their schedules. So the question remained, who is the Harlequin? But the unasked question, more important of the two, was, how did we get into this position where a laughing, irresponsible japer of Jabberwocky and Jive could disrupt our entire economic and cultural life with $150,000 worth of jelly beans? Jelly, for God's sake, beans. This is madness. Where did he get the money to buy $150,000 worth of jelly beans? They knew it would have cost that much because they had a team of situation analysts pulled off another assignment and rushed to the slidewalk scene to sweep up and count the candies and produce findings which disrupted their schedules and threw their entire branch at least a day behind. Jelly beans. Jelly beans? Now, wait a second. A second accounted for. No one has manufactured jelly beans for over 100 years. Where did he get jelly beans? Well, that's another good question. More than likely, it will never be answered to your complete satisfaction. But then, how many questions ever are? The middle, you know. Here's the beginning, how it starts. A desk pad, day for day, and turn each day. 9 o'clock, open the mail. 9:45... appointment with Planning Commission Board. 10:30, discuss installation progress charts with JL. 11:45, pray for rain. 12, lunch. And so it goes. I'm sorry, Miss Grant, but the time for interviews was set at 2:30, and it's almost 5 now. I'm sorry you're late, but those are the rules. You'll have to wait till next year to submit application for this college again. And So it goes. Oh, I couldn't wait, Fred. I had to be at Pierre Cartin's by 3, and you said you'd meet me under the clock in the terminal at 2:45, and you weren't there, so well, I had to go on. You're always late, Fred. If you'd been there, we could have sewed it up together. But, well, as it was, I took the order alone. And so it goes.
Dear Mr. and Mrs. Atterley, in reference to your son Gerald's constant tardiness, I am afraid we will have to suspend him from school unless a more reliable method can be instituted, guaranteeing he will arrive at his classes on time. Granted, he is an exemplary student. His marks are high. His constant flouting of the schedules, however, this school makes it impractical to maintain him in a system where the other children seem capable of getting where they are supposed to be on time.
And so it goes. You cannot vote unless you appear at 8:45 a.m.
I don't care if the script is good. I need it Thursday.
Checkout time is 2 p.m.
You got it here late. The job's taken. Sorry.
Your salary has been docked for 20 minutes time lost.
God, what time is it? I gotta run.
And so it goes. And so it goes. And so it goes. And so it goes, 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 tick-tock, tick-tock, tick-tock. And one day, we no longer let time serve us. We serve time. And we are slaves of the schedule. Worshippers of the sun's passing, bound into a life predicated on restrictions because the system will not function if we don't keep the schedule tight. Until it becomes more than a minor inconvenience to be late, it becomes a sin, then a crime punishable by this. Effective 15 July, 2389, 12 midnight, the office of the Master Timekeeper will require all citizens to submit their time cards and cardioplates for processing. In accordance with Statute 5557 SGH 999, governing the revocation of time per capita, all cardioplates will be keyed to the individual holder, and what they had done was devise a method of curtailing the amount of life a person could have. If he was 10 minutes late, he lost 10 minutes of his life. An hour was proportionately worth more revocation. If someone was consistently tardy, he might find himself on a Sunday night receiving a communique from the master timekeeper that his time had run out, and he would be turned off at high noon on Monday. Please straighten your affairs, sir. And so, by this simple scientific expedient, utilizing a scientific process held dearly secret by the TikTok man's office, the system was maintained. It was the only expedient thing to do. It was, after all, patriotic. The schedules had to be met. After all, there was a war on. But wasn't there always?
Now, that is really disgusting,
said the Harlequin, when Pretty Alice showed him the wanted poster.
Disgusting and highly improbable. After all, this isn't the days of desperados. A wanted poster?
You know, Alice noted, you speak with a great deal of inflection.
I'm sorry.
No need to be sorry. You're always saying I'm sorry. You have such massive guilt over it. It's really very sad.
I'm sorry,
he repeated, and then pursed his lips so the dimples appeared momentarily. He hadn't wanted to say that at all.
I have to go out again. I have to do something.
Alice slammed her coffee bulb down on the counter.
Oh, for God's sake, Everett. Can't you stay home just one night? Must you always be out in a ghastly clown suit running around annoying people? Alice, I'm...
He stopped and clapped the jester's hat onto his auburn thatch with a tiny tingling of bells. He rose, rinsed out his coffee bulb at the tap, and put it into the dryer for a moment.
I have to go, Alice.
She didn't answer. The fax box was purring, and she pulled a sheet out, read it, threw it toward him on the counter.
It's about you, of course. You're ridiculous.
He read it quickly. It said the TikTok man was trying to locate him. He didn't care. He was going out to be late again. At the door, dredging for an exit line, he hurled back petulantly.
Well,
You speak with inflection, too.
Alice rolled her pretty eyes heavenward.
Oh, you're ridiculous.
The Harlequin stalked out, slamming the door, which sighed shut softly and locked itself. There was a gentle knock, and Alice got up with an exhalation of exasperated breath and opened the door. He stood there.
I'll be back about 10:30, okay?
She pulled a rueful face.
Why do you tell me that? Why? You know you'll be late. You know it. You are always late. So why do you tell me these dumb things?
She closed the door. On the other side, the Harlequin nodded to himself.
Yeah, she's right. She's always right. I'll be late. I'm always late. Why do I tell her these dumb things?
He shrugged again and went off to be late once more. He had fired off the firecracker rockets that said, I will attend the 115th Annual International Medical Association invocation at 8 p.m. precisely. I do hope you will all be able to join me. The words had burned in the sky, and of course the authorities were there, lying in wait for him. They assumed, naturally, that he would be late. He arrived 20 minutes early. While they were setting up the spider webs to trap and hold him and blowing a large bullhorn, he frightened and unnerved them so their own moisturized encirclement webs sucked closed, and they were hauled up kicking and shrieking high above the amphitheater's floor. The Harlequin laughed and laughed and apologized profusely. The physicians, gathered in solemn conclave, roared with laughter and accepted the Harlequin's apologies with exaggerated bowing and posturing. And a merry time was had by all, who thought the Harlequin was a regular foofarah in fancy pants. All, that is, but the authorities, who had been sent out by the office of the TikTok man, who hung there like so much dockside cargo hauled up above the floor of the amphitheater in a most unseemly fashion. The shopping level of the city was thronged with the thirsty colors of the buyers. Women in canary yellow chitons and men in pseudo Tyrolean outfits that were jade and leather and fit very tightly, save for the balloon pants. When the Harlequin appeared on the still being constructed shell of the new efficiency shopping center, his bullhorn to his elfishly laughing lips, everyone pointed and stared, and he berated them.
Why do you let them order you about? Why let them tell you to hurry and scurry like ants or maggots? Take your time. Saunter a while. Enjoy the sunshine. Enjoy the breeze. Let life carry you at your own pace. Don't be slaves of time. It's a hell of a way to die, slowly, by degrees. Down with the TikTok man.
Who's the nut? Most of the shoppers wanted to know. Who's the nut? Oh, wow, I'm going to be late again. I got to run. And the construction gang in the shopping center received an urgent order from the office of the master timekeeper that the dangerous criminal, known as the Harlequin, was atop their spire, and their aid was urgently needed in apprehending him. The work crew said no, they would lose time on their construction schedule. But the TikTok man managed to pull the proper threads of governmental webbing, and they were told to cease work and catch that nitwit up there in the spire with a bullhorn. So, a dozen and more burly workers began climbing into their construction platforms, releasing the A-grab plates and rising toward the Harlequin. After the debacle, in which, through the Harlequin's attention to personal safety, no one was seriously injured, the workers tried to reassemble and assault him again. But it was too late. The Harlequin had vanished. It had attracted quite a crowd, however, and the shopping cycle was thrown off by hours, simply hours. The purchasing needs of the system were therefore falling behind, and so measures were taken to accelerate the cycle for the rest of the day. But it got bogged down and speeded up, and they sold too many float valves and not nearly enough wakelers, which meant that the poply ratio was off, which made it necessary to rush cases and cases of spoiling smasho to stores that usually needed a case only every 3 or 4 hours. The shipments were bollocksed. The transshipments were misrouted. And in the end, even the Swizzleskid Industries felt it.
Don't come back till you have him,
the TikTok man said very quietly, very sincerely, extremely dangerously. They used dogs. They used probes. They used cardioplate cross-offs. They used heapers. They used bribery. They used stick tights. They used intimidation. They used torment. They used torture. They used finks. They used cops. They used search and seizure. They used Feleron. They used betterment incentive. They used fingerprints. They used Bertillon. They used cunning. They used guile. They used treachery. They used Raoul Mitgong, but he didn't help much. They used applied physics. They used techniques of criminology. And, what the hell, they caught him. After all, his name was Everett C. Marm, and he wasn't much to begin with, except a man who had no sense of time.
Repent, Harlequin,
said the TikTok man.
Yeah, get stuffed, the Harlequin replied, sneering.
You've been late a total of 63 years, 5 months, 3 weeks, 2 days, 12 hours, 41 minutes, 59 seconds, and 0.036111 microseconds. You've used up everything you can, and more. I'm going to turn you off.
Eh, scare someone else. I'd rather be dead than live in a dumb world with a bogeyman like you.
It's my job.
You're full of it. You're a tyrant. You have no right to order people around and kill them if they show up late.
You can't adjust. You can't fit in.
Unstrap me and I'll fit my fist into your mouth.
You are a nonconformist.
That didn't used to be a felony.
It is now. Live in the world around you.
Yeah, I hate it. It's a terrible world.
Not everyone thinks so. Most people enjoy order.
I don't. And most of the people I know don't.
That's not true. How do you think we caught you?
I don't know. I'm not interested.
A girl named Pretty Alice told us who you were.
That's a lie.
It's true. You unnerve her. She wants to belong. She wants to conform. I'm going to turn you off.
And do it already. Stop arguing with me.
I'm not going to turn you off.
You're an idiot.
Repent, Harlequin.
Get stuffed.
So they sent him to Coventry. And in Coventry, they worked him over. It was just like what they did to Winston Smith in 1984, which was a book none of them knew about. But the techniques are really quite ancient. And so they did it to Everett C. Marm. And one day, quite a long time later, the Harlequin appeared on the communications web, appearing elfish and dimpled and bright-eyed, and not at all brainwashed. And he said he had been wrong, that it was a very good thing indeed, to belong and be right on time, hip-ho, and away we go. And everyone stared up at him on the public screens that covered an entire city block, and they said to themselves, yeah, well, you see, he was just a nut after all. And if that's the way the system is run, then let's do it that way, because it doesn't pay to fight City Hall, or in this case, the TikTok man. So Everett C. Marm was destroyed, which was a loss because of what Thoreau said earlier. But you can't make an omelet without breaking a few eggs. And in every revolution, a few die who shouldn't. But they have to, because that's the way it happens. And if you make only a little change, then it seems to be worthwhile. Or, to make the point lucidly,
excuse me, sir. I don't know how to tell you this, but you were 3 minutes late. The schedule is it's a little bit off.
He grinned sheepishly.
That's ridiculous,
murmured the TikTok man behind his mask.
Check your watch.
And then he went into his office, going. That story was titled Repent, Harlequin, Said the TikTok Man. A Nebula award-winning short story by Harlan Ellison. It appears in the book Nebula Award Stories, edited by Damon Knight. This is Michael Hansen speaking. Technical production for Mindwebs by Leslie Hilsenhoff. Mind Webs is a production of WHA Radio in Madison, a service of University of Wisconsin Extension.
This is the Wisconsin Educational Radio Network.
I feel like a new man. It's a lovely day today.
I thought you had flu.
I took a grandpa headache powder, and I'm well better.
When colds and flu are about, grandpa headache powders are what you need. Grandpa headache powders work fast because they dissolve almost immediately. Grandpa makes all those dreadful flu symptoms disappear quickly. So, whenever you're in pain, get fast relief. Get grandpa headache powder.
Ah, grandpa.
Sunrise and sunset, promise and fulfillment, birth and death. The whole drama of life is written in the sands of time. From the 42nd Bank and Trust Company, where Jane Evans used to work, you can hear the clock atop Amy Semple McPherson's Angelus Temple.
It happened the morning after I became engaged to Harold. I got to the bank a little early that morning, hoping I'd be able to see him for a minute before we opened for business. And sure enough, Harold was just hanging up his hat and coat when I came in the door. You see, I'm one of the junior tellers at the main branch here in town. Or rather, I was. And Harold is assistant manager. That's how we met. So, this morning, I didn't stop at my own cage, but went right on through the gate and walked up quietly behind Harold. Hello, darling.
What?
Why, Mr. Osborne, don't you remember me? I'm the girl.
Jane, please.
Good morning, Mr. Osborne.
Oh, good morning, Johnson.
Good morning,
Miss Evans, would you step into my office for a moment?
Why, certainly.
Jane, really, you mustn't. I mean,
what? I didn't do anything. I just
said... suppose someone had overheard. Don't you see?
Well, what if they had? They'll know about it in a day or two anyway.
But that's just the point, my dear. They mustn't.
They mustn't? Because we're going to tell our friends, aren't we?
Jane, I thought you understood all that. You know how the bank frowns on office romances. After we're married, it'll be different.
But, Harold, but this is different. We're engaged.
Nevertheless, my dear, the policy of the bank is stupid.
Oh, fully on the policy of the bank. This is our business.
But, Jane, the bank is my career. And I'm only thinking
of the bank. And I'm thinking of our life together.
Jane, please be practical. In my position here, I simply must live up to the standards that the bank
says. The bank. Sometimes I wish I could meet somebody, just somebody who hated banks. It wasn't a very good way to start off an engagement. Or even to start off a day's work, for that matter. I went back to my cage, feeling miserable. And I got out my cash for the day, including a little package of 25 $1,000 bills that a client of ours always called for on Friday. We never asked why. That isn't the bank's business. And I unlocked my cash drawer and put the money away. Then it was 10 o'clock, and I opened my window for business. There weren't many people in the bank yet, but at my window, there were two men. Good morning.
Good morning.
Can I help you?
Yeah. This is a stick-up. Just take it easy and do what we tell you, and you won't get hurt. But my friend here's got a gun under that newspaper he's carrying.
Gun? And I'd love to use it, sister.
What do you want me to do?
Here's a paper bag. Fill it up.
Yes. All right.
And don't forget those 25 G notes that George Oliver calls for every Friday.
The what?
Don't stall.
We know all about him. That's one reason we're here.
Don't make any funny moves, sister, because if you do, it's... tightens.
I'd often wondered what I'd do if this ever happened, but now I couldn't even think. As I fumbled with the money, I looked at the two men. One of them was about 35, dark hair, square jaw, hard blue eyes. The other, the one with the gun, was a nervous, eager-looking boy, about 21. I knew that they meant everything they said. I glanced sideways for just a minute towards Harold's office. And as luck would have it, he was just coming out the door. And he must have seen that something was wrong because he started right over to my
window. Come on, sister, slap him.
I'm trying to hurry.
The paper only, never mind the change.
That's right.
Who's that coming over here?
That's Mr. Osborne, the manager.
All right. Just don't try to make any bright conversation. I'll do the talking.
Is there anything I can do here, Miss Evans?
Yes. Just stand right where you are and keep quiet.
What?
Harold,
don't look so hurt. You've heard of banks being held up before, haven't you?
Oh.
Come on, miss. Hand it over. We haven't got all day.
Here. Here you are.
Thanks.
We ought to take her along.
Don't be crazy. Come on.
We ought to take her.
No, you can't do that. Miss Evans is one of my most trusted employees.
And I'm his fiancée.
Oh, you are,
Jane?
Yeah? Now, I know we're going to take her along.
You're a fool, Sonny.
Yeah? Well, Harold, you don't think I'm so dumb, do you, Harold? Because you know what happens to your girlfriend if you set the cops on us?
No.
Yeah. Come on.
Don't do anything, Harold. I'll be all right. Why would I tell a couple of bandits who came in to hold up the bank that I was engaged to Harold? Particularly when Harold was the manager of the bank. Oh, it was crazy. But there were a lot of crazy things I did that day that I didn't understand myself until later. Naturally, when I told them that, they took me along as a hostage. Well, the next thing I knew, I was sitting in the front seat of a big blue car beside the one called Frank, the other one called Sonny, who tied a blindfold over my eyes. Once we drove in somewhere, and for 15 or 20 minutes, there was a lot of banging and clattering around the car. Then we drove on. At first, I was too frightened to even breathe. And then I began to get angry. Just what do you think you're going to do with me?
Tell you the truth, I haven't quite made up my mind.
Yeah? Well, I have.
Shut up, Sonny.
Look, I demand that at least you take this silly blindfold off.
Oh, no, we couldn't do that, baby. Then you might see how we'd strip this car down just now and change the hood and the fenders.
Shut up,
plates.
Sonny. You talk too much.
What's the difference? She ain't going to be around.
Shut up.
What's the matter? You getting soft?
No. But a bank rap's enough without having some trigger-happy punk of a kid.
You better not talk to me that way.
I'll talk to you any way I want to. Watch out the back of cops.
Huh? Cops? You don't think the little lady's boyfriend is going to...
I wouldn't want to bet too much on it. With you, Miss Evans?
I'm sure I don't know what you're talking about. All I know is that at least Harold isn't a cowardly, bullying...
I'm sure Harold is the perfect gentleman. I got a hunch he's also the perfect banker.
I don't know what you're talking about.
You just don't want to admit what I'm talking about. Which is that in spite of anything that might happen to you, Harold will turn us in.
And have me... He wouldn't.
No? Maybe we can check on that. Turn on the radio.
And what's that going to prove?
Short wave.
You see? All the latest equipment for bank robbers, sweetheart. That's us.
R-17-1-7. Disturbance at 8th and Pico. Disturbance at 8th and Pico. Same motel proprietor. 1-7, Roger. All units. Attention, all units.
Uh-huh.
Two unidentified men wanted for holding up a main branch of 42nd Bank and Trust Company and kidnapping woman in
Florida.
Jane Evans. Caucasian.
30 double.
Last seen wearing light blue dress, black shoes.
He's done it. He's done it, Frank.
See what I mean, Miss Evans?
Well, it was his duty. Why shouldn't he?
Nothing. No reason at all. Just a question of who rates the most for the guy, I guess. His boss or his woman?
All right. He asked for it. I told him what I'd do.
What are you going to do?
Well, Miss Evans, I think we'll drive up this little side road here and let you out.
Who?
You shouldn't have any trouble hitching a ride back. If you do, just try what Claudette Colbert did in that picture.
Huh?
Remember?
You kidding?
You heard what they said. She was nothing but excess baggage anyway. Now she's just another way they can identify us.
Yeah, all right, but that don't mean we let the guy get away with it. I told him what I'd do to her. If he squawked, then I'm going.
You're going to do what I tell you.
Yeah? If I'd known you were so yellow.
And what was that you said, Sonny?
All right, Frank, but I'm not going to... Cops!
Turn it in here. Give me a gun, Sonny. Get down on the floor and I'll plug it.
I'll plug him, Frank.
Give me that gun and get down on the floor.
You're nuts. They'll get us.
I know what I'm doing. You do what I tell you. That's right. And keep covered up and keep quiet. Take off the blindfold, Evans.
Look here, if you think
you're going to kiss me, and you better make it good.
What?
Because this gun's going to be right in your ribs. All right, now.
I'm going to do nothing.
Oh. Well, you kind of startled me, officer.
What are you doing here?
Well, if you must know, I'm getting engaged. Is there anything wrong with that?
Let me see your license.
We haven't got the license yet.
Your driver's license.
Oh, sure.
What's the matter?
Just let me see your license.
Yeah. Here you are. You looking for somebody?
Just a couple of guys who held up a bank, kidnapped a girl.
Is that right?
Young lady got any identification?
Go on, tell him, honey. You see, we left town in sort of a hurry. You might call it a sort of elopement.
Sort of elopement, huh?
Yes.
Well, I guess you're all right. But you know you shouldn't be parking in here in the broad daylight like this.
Well, yeah, but you know how it is.
Yeah, sure, I know how it is.
Sure. Wait a minute. All right, you can pop around now, Sonny. They're leaving.
You sure?
Yeah. Well, Miss Evans, I'm afraid that under the circumstances, you'll have to put up with our company a little longer. That wasn't as bad as all that, was it? Well, was it? Tell it.
He slaps him right in the puss.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I guess it does.
That was crazy, too. Here I was, my life completely in this big ape's hands. And I had to slap his face. I knew I'd made him angry, and it was even more dangerous. I'd hurt his pride. But there was nothing to do about it now. For a long time, we just drove along, and nobody said anything. We were crossing a stretch of desert heading towards a mountain range. We just passed through a little town. I saw the car pull out of a side road as we flashed by, but neither of the two men did. And all of a sudden, my mind began to race, thinking that maybe now was coming my chance to escape, and wondering what I could do. Then my blood ran cold again, the way they were talking.
They're still heading for the same place, Frank?
Yeah.
The mountain place?
That's right.
What about Miss Spitfire here?
I'll take care of that when the time comes.
She knows too much.
That's right.
If I thought you was getting soft, Frank,
what would you do?
You know what we gotta do, don't you?
Yeah.
Where?
Well, not right out here in the open desert. That's a cinch.
The mountains?
Yeah. Maybe the mountains.
Maybe. There better not be no... Hey, cops again. Look, right behind us.
Yeah. Those others must have got the thick of things over.
Cops. In the middle of the desert and no one in sight for miles.
What are you talking about?
I'm talking about this.
Sonny!
I've been waiting to do this all day.
Hey, you're crazy.
We get them before they get us, that's all. They're shooting back. They know they got a fight in the hands now.
That's all we. Shoot at their tires, you hear?
Okay. Right,
and that's not supposed to happen the way you saw it in the movies, huh? You.
Me?
Yeah, you. Get down. Down on the floor.
What are you going
to
do?
There's only one thing to do now. Drive like...
At first, I wasn't afraid at all. It was even a little exciting. I kept thinking that maybe in just a few minutes I was going to be rescued, and wondering what Harold would say. And at the same time, feeling the exhilaration of being in a race and wanting my side to win. Of course, that was crazy, too. And then suddenly the car took a sickening lurch. I scrambled up onto the seat again. We were out of the desert now, climbing a long, winding hill that twisted up towards the mountains. The police car was falling behind, but it was still following us. We hit another curve. I looked down. For just a minute, there seemed to be no road under my side of the car at all. Only a sheer drop down to a canyon filled with huge boulders. 100 feet below. I hit the other side of the curve and straightened out. And I was frightened now, all right. I was weak, and I was sick from fear.
Tell you to stay down on the floor.
I can't. Frank, look out, please.
Get your hand away from that wheel.
You're going to kill
him. I know what I'm doing.
Stop it. Please, Frank, stop.
Stop.
Please.
It might be all right for you, lady, but it wouldn't be so good for me.
I'm afraid.
Take it easy, kid. Close your eyes like you're doing the roller coaster. You'll be all right.
Oh, Frank will be killed.
What do you think I'm running for instead of fighting? Just so nobody will be killed. Not even cops.
Frank, look out.
Keep away from that wheel, I told you.
Look out.
Keep away.
Frank.
I hate to
please,
do this. But...
Please. But... I saw his fist rush up towards the point of my jaw. And when I woke up, it was mid-afternoon, and I was lying on a bed in the bare little room of what was obviously a mountain cabin. Through the one window, all I could see was the jumble of rocks and boulders piled up against the mountainside. And I felt my chin. It was sore. There was a little bruise on it. But aside from that, I seemed to be all in one piece.
I see. It's tough.
Then suddenly I heard voices. They were coming from the next room through the crack of the door, left an inch or two ajar. So I crept over. I listened.
Now, don't worry. I'll handle it.
Okay. Frank?
Sure. Now, go on down into town and get some grub, like I told you.
Okay, Frank. You sure you don't...
No. Get going.
Okay, Frank.
I stood there by the door, frozen with fear. I didn't need to hear any more to know what they'd been talking about. For a second, I thought of escape, and I looked wildly over towards the window. It was too late. The door was already swinging open.
Oh. Been listening, huh?
Yes.
How do you feel?
All right.
Well, glad to see you're up and around.
Why? Because it's against your principles to kill women who are unconscious?
There's a path down the backside of the mountain that leads into the main highway. It's 4 or 5 miles long and pretty rugged, but you ought to be able to make it before dark if you hurry.
Oh.
That answer your question?
Yes, I guess it does.
Well, you better get going.
How do you know
that? Because you're going to promise me not to. Aren't you?
Yes.
All you have to say is that I slugged you. That's all you remember until you woke up by the side of the road. We'll be out of here and over the border by morning anyway.
What about Sonny?
I can handle Sonny.
I guess I do owe you something after all.
Me? What?
My life.
I play strictly for me. I just don't want that punk kid with his movie idea of cops and robbers to be hanging a murder rap on us, that's all.
You're a strange man to be a
crook. Listen, there are just two kinds of guys in the world. Right guys and wrong guys. And the wrong kind can be the usual bum with a gun in his hand. Or he can be a pillar of society that sits all day behind a big shiny desk. He can be kind to his mother and nice to little kids. And a lot of fancy excuses and reasons he gives himself. Or, just no reasons at all, like me. But a wrong guy is still a wrong guy. He's no good.
Well, thanks, anyway.
Well, you better get going. By the way, sorry I hit you.
That's all right. I guess I had it coming.
And... I'm sorry I let you get into this mess in the first place. But...
But what?
That kiss. I meant that.
Did you?
Yeah.
Frank. So did I.
Jane.
What? Frank!
Yeah, you trailed us here after all.
Like a cop.
Yeah.
I saw him down ahead of me on a turn of the road. I just had time to turn around and get back. You still got the dame, huh?
Yeah.
I was hoping you hadn't done nothing yet. She's about the only ace we got left.
Take the south window. I'll take the west one.
Yeah.
Don't try to go knocking them off. It'll only make it worse. Just keep them covered so they can't rush us.
Yeah. Well, if I can get a clean shot...
You do what I tell you. Can you see them?
Yeah. They're down behind the big rocks.
And that's as far as they can get. That's as far as they could get even if they had an army. Until it gets dark.
Frank, we could turn the car lights on them.
They'd only shoot them out.
We can hold them, Frank. We got enough ammunition here.
You can't eat ammunition. Maybe they can't get up, but we can't get down either. We can't stay here forever.
They'll never take me alive. They'll never take me alive.
Oh, stop it, will you? Try using your head for a change. Oh. Yeah.
Frank, what could it be?
I don't know. The boys seem to have stopped the artillery barrage, too.
Don't answer.
Don't answer. Are you kidding? What's the difference? You don't think we're going to kid anybody when we're not home, do you?
What?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, she's here. Sure she's all right.
Frank, who is it?
It's your boyfriend, Harold.
Harold?
He came with the cops. He's on the Forest Ranger's emergency call box just down the road.
Let me talk to him.
Worried about him?
No, it isn't that. Let me talk to him.
Sure, go ahead.
Harold? Yes. Yes, so am I. No, No, nothing like that. They've been quite all right. Yes, of course they are. No, there's nothing to prevent them from killing me anytime they want to. Listen, Harold, all you care about is getting the money back and me, isn't it? Yes, I know. All right, wait a minute. Frank, you said you were near the border. How long would it take you to get there?
A couple of hours. One would put us in the clear.
Could you give them back the money? And me?
Will the cops go for a deal like that?
They got you. Harold? Well, what's getting dark got to do with it? Of course you can't storm the place and expect to find me alive. Now, listen, Harold. Harold, they'll give back the money. Yes, I'll bring it down myself, but you've got to give them 1 hour start. Well, you can just say they rescued me and the money, but the men got away. No, Harold, nothing like that. You've got to promise me, Harold, on your word of honor, your solemn word of honor. All right. They'll do it.
Okay.
Are you nuts?
It's our only chance.
Harold? All right. Yes, I'm coming down. Now.
But if she goes...
She's gone. The dough's still in the paper bag. It's on the table.
Keep
going.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Harold, just so you don't have an idea you're getting away with anything, I think you're a dirty liar.
I hardly heard and didn't even think about it. I was so relieved and still so bewildered by everything. Running down the hill with the paper bag of money clutched in my hand. And then I saw Harold crouching behind a rock. And then some policemen. And then I was around the bend. And they were all running up to me. And I just threw myself into Harold's arms.
Jane, dearest. Jane.
Yeah?
Are you all right?
I'm all right, Harold. Here's the money.
Oh, yes. Yes, it's all here. All right, officer.
Okay, Chuck, let him go.
Come, my dear.
Harold. Harold, what?
Tear gas.
Tear gas?
It's quite harmless, really.
But, Harold, tell him what we promised.
I'm afraid it's out of our hands now, my dear.
Harold, you promised. You gave me your word of honor.
Of course I did.
You knew. You knew all the time you planned to do this. Stop that!
Please, my dear, you're on the wrong.
Stop it!
Jane!
Stop it! I tried to run back, but they held me. And I had to watch. I couldn't help it. It seemed hours, but it was only minutes, I suppose. The tear gas bombs exploding around the cabin, crashing through the windows as they got the range. And then something white fluttered from the door, and they came out. The boy first with his hands in the air, and then Frank, stumbling towards us like blind men, and coughing. Those terrible, racking coughs that seemed to be tearing him to pieces. Frank!
Hello.
Frank, I didn't know. I swear to you, I didn't know.
I know. I did know. I knew before you left.
Oh, why did you let me? I wouldn't have gone if I'd known.
Because he's just the kind that would have stormed the place. Maybe I couldn't have handled Sonny.
Frank, I'll help you. I'll do everything I possibly can, anything.
Skip it.
Just take some advice, will you? Next time, be sure it's a right guy.
You know, it's funny. It's like he said. People can be honest and dishonest in so many different ways. Well, I got to the bank early the next morning, too. Harold was already there waiting for me.
Hello, darling.
Hello.
I'm so glad you're here early. There's some things I wanted to talk over with you. You know, you're quite the heroine now.
Am I?
Oh, yes. And you know, darling, I've been thinking, perhaps I was a little too conscientious yesterday, about our marriage, I mean. I think perhaps you were right, after all. We ought to tell them.
Harold, about our marriage.
Yes?
There isn't going to be any marriage.
Isn't going to be any.
I found out something about a girl getting married, Harold. Marriage is something you do second.
Do second?
Yes. First, you find a right guy.
This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information and to find out how you can volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. This is The Oval Portrait by Edgar Allan Poe. The chateau into which my valet had ventured to make forcible entrance rather than permit me, in my desperately wounded condition, to pass a night in the open air, was one of those piles of commingled gloom and grandeur which have so long frowned among the Apennines, not less, in fact, than in the fancy of Mrs. Radcliffe. To all appearance, it had been temporarily and very lately abandoned. We established ourselves in one of the smallest and least sumptuously furnished apartments. It lay in a remote turret of the building. Its decorations were rich, yet tattered and antique. Its walls were hung with tapestry and bedecked with manifold and multiform armorial trophies, together with an unusually great number of very spirited modern paintings in frames of rich golden arabesque. In these paintings, which depended from the walls not only in their main surfaces, but in very many nooks which the bizarre architecture of the chateau rendered necessary, in these paintings my incipient delirium perhaps had caused me to take deep interest, so that I bade Pedro to close the heavy shutters of the room, since it was already night, to light the tongues of a tall candelabrum which stood by the head of my bed, and to throw open far and wide the fringed curtains of black velvet which enveloped the bed itself. I wished, all this done, that I might resign myself, if not to sleep, at least alternately to the contemplation of these pictures and the perusal of a small volume which had been found upon the pillow, and which purported to criticize and describe them. Long, long I read, and devoutly, devotedly I gazed. Rapidly and gloriously the hours flew by, and the deep midnight came. The position of the candelabrum displeased me, and outreaching my hand with difficulty rather than disturb my slumbering valet, I placed it so as to throw its rays more fully upon the book. But the action produced an effect altogether unanticipated. The rays of the numerous candles, for there were many, now fell within a niche of the room which had hitherto been thrown into deep shade by one of the bedposts. I thus saw in vivid light a picture all unnoticed before. It was the portrait of a young girl, just ripening into womanhood. I glanced at the painting hurriedly and then closed my eyes. Why I did this was not at first apparent even to my own perception. But while my lids remained thus shut, I ran over in my mind my reason for so shutting them. It was an impulsive movement to gain time for thought, to make sure that my vision had not deceived me, to calm and subdue my fancy for a more sober and more certain gaze. In a very few moments I again looked fixedly at the painting. That I now saw aright I could not and would not doubt, for the first flashing of the candles upon that canvas had seemed to dissipate the dreamy stupor which was stealing over my senses and to startle me at once into waking life. The portrait, I have already said, was that of a young girl. It was a mere head and shoulders done in what is technically termed a vignette manner, much in the style of the favorite heads of Sully. The arms, the bosom, and even the hands of the radiant hair melted imperceptibly into the vague yet deep shadow which formed the background of the whole. The frame was oval, richly gilded and filigreed in Moresque. As a thing of art, nothing could be more admirable than the painting itself, but it could have been neither the execution of the work nor the immortal beauty of the countenance which had so suddenly and so vehemently moved me. Least of all, it could have been that my fancy, shaken from its half-slumber, had mistaken the head for that of a living person. I saw at once that the peculiarities of the design, of the vignetting, of the frame, must have instantly dispelled such idea, must have prevented even its momentary entertainment. Thinking earnestly upon these points, I remained, for an hour perhaps, half-sitting, half-reclining, with my vision riveted upon the portrait. At length, satisfied with the true secret of its effect, I fell back within the bed. I had found the spell of the picture in an absolute lifelikeliness of expression which, at first startling, finally confounded, subdued, and appalled me. With deep and reverent awe, I replaced the candelabrum in its former position. The cause of my deep agitation being thus shut from view, I sought eagerly the volume which discussed the paintings and their histories. Turning to the number which designated the oval portrait, I read there the vague and quaint words which follow. She was a maiden of rarest beauty, and not more lovely than full of glee, and evil was the hour when she saw and loved and wedded the painter. He, passionate, studious, austere, and having already a bride in his art, she a maiden of rarest beauty, and not more lovely than full of glee, all light and smiles, and frolicsome as the young fawn, loving and cherishing of all things, hating only the art which was her rival, dreading only the palette and brushes and other untoward instruments which deprived her of the countenance of her lover. It was thus a terrible thing for this lady to hear the painter speak of his desire to portray even his young bride. But she was humble and obedient, and sat meekly for many weeks in the dark, high turret chamber where the light dripped upon the pale canvas only from overhead. But he, the painter, took glory in his work, which went on from hour to hour and from day to day. And he was a passionate and wild and moody man who became lost in reveries, so that he would not see that the light which fell so ghastly in that lone turret withered the health in the spirits of his bride, who pined visibly to all but him. Yet she smiled on and still on, uncomplainingly, because she saw that the painter, who had high renown, took a fervent and burning pleasure in his task, and wrought day and night to depict her who so loved him, yet who grew daily more dispirited and weak. And in sooth, some who beheld the portrait spoke of its resemblance in low words, as of a mighty marvel, and a proof not less of the power of the painter than of his deep love for her whom he depicted so surpassingly well. But at length, as the labor drew nearer to its conclusion, there were admitted none into the turret, for the painter had grown wild with the ardor of his work, and turned his eyes from canvas merely even to regard the countenance of his wife. And he would not see that the tints which he spread upon the canvas were drawn from the cheeks of her who sate beside him. And when many weeks had passed, and but little remained to do, save one brush upon the mouth and one tint upon the eye, the spirit of the lady again flickered up as the flame within the socket of the lamp. And then the brush was given, and then the tint was placed. And, for one moment, the painter stood entranced before the work which he had wrought. But in the next, while he yet gazed, he grew tremulous, and very pallid, and aghast, and crying with a loud voice, "This is indeed life itself!" turned suddenly to regard his beloved. She was dead.